Hello and welcome to the Tabletop Bellhop Gaming Podcast, episode 236, Gamma Expo 2024 recap. Who should go to Gamma Expo?
So tonight's another special con recap episode, the second part of our Gamma Expo 2024 coverage. Now, Gamma is a tabletop gaming trade show, which happened a couple of weeks ago in Louisville, Kentucky. Tonight, we're going to be talking about the event in general and who we think should be looking to attend next year.
Before we get to that, some introductions. I'm Sean, your host, and here with me, we have Deanna.
Hey, folks.
And the tabletop bellhop himself, Mo T.
I am Mo Tuzano, the tabletop bellhop, your cardboard concierge, helping you make your game nights better. Thank you, Grand Gamers Guild, for sponsoring this episode.
Watch us record this podcast live Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern at twitch.tv/tabletopbellhop. Find links to games and other things we mentioned tonight at tabletopbellhop.com/episode236. That's the numbers 236. Links may be affiliate links and games mentioned may be review copies provided by publishers. We're here to answer your gaming and game night questions.
Tonight, the questions we are looking to answer are: what is the Gamma Expo trade show? What did we get out of attending? And who should be looking to attend this show? To be clear, and some disclosure, that Deanna and I did attend Gamma Expo 2024, both as Gamma Media and Events voting members. We are to the Tabletop Bellhop as a member of Gamma, and as hosted media, which means basically they comped us and paid us and invited us to come to the show. So just for full clarity and disclosure, wanted to make that was perfectly clear.
Now, tonight is going to be all about the event in general, what it's like, what you can expect if you go to Gamma Expo, what different groups get out of it, and etc.
So like any game convention, a big part of Gamma Expo is, of course, the games. As this is the first chance, it's like the first big con of the year for publishers to show off their new hotness and their what's up and coming. Now, that's not what we're talking about tonight, so I just don't want to mislead anyone. We covered that last week on episode 235, Games of Gamma Expo 2024. So if you're looking for what's new and hot and what caught our eye, go check that episode out.
Yeah, you can head to tabletopbellhop.com/episode235. Though I do encourage you to stick around tonight as we've still got plenty to talk about.
And we've covered this a bit last week, but let's go over it again just in case. So what is Gamma and what is the Gamma Expo? Because not everyone even knows that those are two different things.
Okay, first off, I'm going to rattle off a bunch of stuff off their website. Gamma is the Game Manufacturers Association, a nonprofit trade organization that is dedicated to the hobby game industry. Gamma works to promote its members' common interest of increasing the adoption of and engagement with hobby games. They offer a variety of services, including a quarterly industry magazine, weekly newsletters, free online webinars, a special trade day at the Origins Game Fair, ordering guides for retailers, a member portal for networking, business services, and a career center, and there's more.
So the Tabletop Bellhop, as I've just mentioned, like as a thing, as a brand, is a member of Gamma, the Game Manufacturers Association. Obviously, it's spread out. It's not just about game manufacturers anymore. We are part of the media and events arm of Gamma, and we are voting members because there's two different types of memberships you can get, which so far has been a worthwhile thing for us to be part of. But again, tonight's not about Gamma, the organization. It's about Gamma Expo, the trade show.
So the Gamma Expo trade show is only for folks that are in the tabletop games industry, and you must be a member of the Game Manufacturers Association to attend the trade show. So you have to be a Gamma member, and if you're a voting member like we are, then you get two free tickets. But non-voting members can also attend the show by buying tickets. And everyone at the event is a member of one arm of Gamma or another, and this includes creators, media and events, production, publishers, retailers, and wholesalers. Gamma Expo is a place for members of these groups to get together to connect and collaborate. It started as a way for publishers to connect with retailers, and it's still very much that is the focus of this. It's a trade show, but there's a lot going on that is relevant to folks that are neither publishers nor retailers. And this year's Gamma Expo was the biggest yet, with over 2,500 attendees.
All right, well, that seems like a good basis for us to build on. So why don't we start off nice and easy? Why did you attend Gamma Expo? And what was the Tabletop Bellhop doing at what is mostly a retailer-focused trade show?
So the main reason we decided to attend Gamma Expo, and actually part of why we joined Gamma in the first place was to be able to attend Gamma Expo, was networking. Our main goal for this convention was networking, because the last few years have been a bit of a mess, as everyone's well aware, right? COVID messed with everything. And there's a thing in the game industry, I'm not saying it's a good or a bad thing, but there's definitely a thing with people moving positions frequently in the game industry, especially on the publisher side of things and PR reps and media people. They seem to rotate a lot. So Gamma Expo was our chance to reconnect with the publishers we worked with in the past, publishers we've reviewed games from, that we've done giveaways with, that we worked with, that we've fallen out of contact, or the person who was our head contact no longer is. But it was also a chance for us to connect with people we always wanted to work with, publishers and indie creators that we don't currently have a working relationship. We wanted to reach out to them to try to work together.
All right. Well, did it work?
It actually went really well. The biggest surprise was discovering how well known we are in the industry in general. Yeah. Except for some small indie publishers, it seemed like everyone knew who we were and for the most part what we did. And that was kind of cool. That was very affirming. It's something to be proud of, you know. And it was, from my point of view, it was amusing because a heck of a lot of people seemed to know Mo. They'd recognize his face and come from across the room to talk to him. So,
yeah, overall, we met a ton of publishers. Like, I don't even have a count. We should have had the stack of business cards so I could hold them up right now. It was huge. this was, again, both publishers we worked with in the past and new ones. Now, in some cases, we met with the people we needed to talk to, right? Because we're at this trade show. But in most cases, because this is not a media focused show, this is a retailer publisher focused show, we end up meeting with like sales reps or other members or even like CEOs of some of these companies. But it worked out well because even by meeting them, we got our face shown. People got to know us a little better. And every single one of them was more than happy to give us the contact information of who we should be working with. And that was well done. Like, I thought it was very useful. And I was really shocked by how welcoming all the publishers were to media events, because we basically had to walk up to every booth and they'd start trying to sell us, thinking we're retailers. This is why you should have our game in your store. And like, sorry. And we'd hold up our badge, like, sorry, hosted media, we're media and events. And like almost every single person we talked to just shifted. It's like when you go to Montreal and you say bonjour, they automatically go to French, right? It was the same thing. They were just like, okay, now we're talking about media instead of that. And that was great. Now, these meetings happened in a couple of ways. There were scheduled meetings. A lot of people, by being hosted media, we were put on a special like email list that was sent out to all the publishers. So quite a few reached out ahead of time and we had scheduled meetings. But it also happened by stopping by the booth during the exhibit hall, running into people at panels, running into people at lunch, and so on.
And our next reason for being there is that it was a chance to actually get to see, touch, and play with the new hotness. I know, yeah. I know, that's not usually the focus of our show, but it is nice to actually have an idea of what's new and what's going on every once in a while. So,
and we all heard how that went last week. And I think realistically, even though we don't focus on the new hotness and we're not going to be the people breaking the newest games, understanding what is out there helps to frame a lot of the older stuff that we're talking about. So it really kind of benefits everyone. You really did get to see a ton of games, most new, but a few old ones as well.
Oh, yeah. Games. So many games that we couldn't see them all.
Yeah. Well, here's something I don't think we mentioned last week when we were talking about the games. So the exhibit hall, the first day, it's only open for 3 days and it's half the day. We got down a row and a half the first day. And then the second day we did this one little corner. And the third day we were literally rushing around to the people we needed to see and had meetings with. And I am certain we overlooked something awesome.
I saw other people in the Gamma Facebook chat saying that they spent every possible minute in the expo hall and still didn't get to every booth. Yeah. And I can believe it.
I totally believe it. And I got to say, it was great to see these games. It was great to be able to touch and see things. But it threw me for a loop because it wasn't what I was expecting. Now, my only real experience with cons are small local cons, BreakoCon in Toronto and Origins. And at all of those, like you play games, you sit down and play games. You see the entire thing that you get to touch and open and like everything's there on display. That was not what this was like. Now, again, this isn't a gaming convention. This isn't a gamer show for gamers to play games. This is a trade show. So on the exhibit hall floor, you didn't see like the massive booth with tons of tables doing tons of demos. Well, except Asmodee, they had their own thing going on. But in general, it was just like games opened up on display with like, you know, pieces placed on the board. It was more, you know, product shot looking than actual game demos. Very few of the games were literally set out where you could see the full thing. And there were reps, of course, there to talk about them, but they were giving you the elevator pitch for the game more so than a full walkthrough. What you didn't get on the exhibit floor at all is sitting down and playing a full game. That did not exist at Gamma Expo.
No, there was no sitting down at all, ever. There was no chairs. Even the meetings, the scheduled meetings we had, more than half of them were standing meetings. And gosh, my feet hurt. It was just standing for hours.
So one pro tip, if you do attend Gamma, get some walking in before you go, wear your most comfortable shoes, and be prepared to stand quite a bit. Now, I will say, thankfully, at the end of each row of the exhibit hall, at the far end, there were some tables, which were mainly set up there so the vendors could eat lunch, but it was at least some place to sit. Once we found those, we were like, okay, just finish a row. All right, sit and rest for a bit, then we'll do another row. Now, what they did have for people to play more games or get to deep dive the games a bit more were game nights. Now, these, though, weren't just like open game nights. It wasn't where, you know, you go to the open game area of Gamma or you go to the Tabs library of PrecoCon and say, hey, I want to try that game and sign it out. You and your group goes and plays this. None of that was there. These were instead sponsored, hosted events where publishers actually had to rent the tables to show off their games. And every game night, which ran from 9 till midnight, there was a map of who was at what table. And that changed every night. So like the op may have a table one night, the next night that table might be PSI, and the next night it could be another publisher. And even when you sat down to play these, a lot of the tables were just doing short demos, they were doing half games, or just describing the game to people. There were quite a few prototypes on display where you did not get to sit down and play these games.
So really, it was more like a tasting menu at a high-end restaurant than a full meal of gaming.
Yeah, that's a nice analogy. It was a quick taste, or sometimes more just like a peek in the bakery window. So there's a couple of things I thought of when I was talking. The one was that these game nights ran from 9 until midnight, and the seminar started at 8 in the morning. So that was one part of Gamma Expo what we were not expecting, was to be going from 8 in the morning until midnight. Every day was scheduled events from start to finish. The other thing was, I'm not sure if publishers rented tables, I think possibly they get a table as part of being there or part of being Gamma members. There's something there, but I don't know because I'm not a publisher.
All right, fair enough. So publishers were assigned tables. Basically, it was open gaming.
There's a
my
couple
of just go grab a game and grab a table and play.
I was looking actually yesterday for something on the Gamma website, and I believe there are sponsorship levels that gets you different things. So like some of you get social media call outs and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I suspect the tables were probably related to those sponsorship levels.
Yeah, and I read something about there being a waiting list for tables, and then they ended up opening up a secondary ballroom and got some more people in there.
Again, for the games and what we saw, what we're hyped about, what looks awesome. I still say Gnome Hollow. We're looking at a Spiel nominee next year, and Aqua, we're looking for one this year. But for all that, check out last week's episode. So the other big reason we went to Gamma Expo is to learn as an educational experience. We knew that a big part of Gamma Expo is panels and presentations. We got a kind of taste of that at Origins because they do a trade day the day before Origins Hall opens up. And we attended that at Origins. Well, this was like that, but the whole week for all 4 days of the con plus earlier, because they even had a pre-con day, designer day. So we actually hit as many of these as we could, and prepping for the con, we're like, yeah, okay, we'll hit panels. So it'll be great. We'll go to panels. Well, until they released the Gamma app, which is something I don't think I had in the show notes to talk about, but there was a fairly well done app to track all of this. We didn't realize how many panels would be at the exact same time. And more importantly, panels we all wanted to see, like there'd be five things going on and we wanted to go to four of them. So we ended up splitting the team. I don't think Deanna and I, once we overlapped and we're in the same panel, and partway through, I left to go and sit in a different one. So one of the things that was a little frustrating was scheduling was an issue, because you could not possibly go to all the panels you wanted to. Now, overall, I think we attended some great panels. They were extremely well done. They had some true experts in the field speaking, speaking intelligently, questions asked of the crowd. It was actually really well done. And what the panels ended up doing, as Dan already mentioned, we're going from 8 a.m. till midnight. So the way the event was generally broken up on a day was panels in the morning, a networking lunch, which the lunch is fantastic. We'll talk about that in a minute. And then the expo hall in the afternoon. Now, once the expo hall closed, there was time for dinner, and then it was gaming events all night until midnight.
So the networking lunches, yeah, those were great. So they brought in, there was 4 food trucks that are set up around the conference hall, and you got a ticket that let you go get a lunch at one of these 4 food trucks. And there was some, I mean, there that part wasn't the smoothest with, you know, some issues with lining up and waiting for lunch and stuff. But then they had tons of round tables set up in this massive ballroom for everyone to go sit down and have lunch together. And you wander around, you find some strangers to sit with, you have your lunch, you meet some random people. And it was a really just a great way to mix and mingle and sit for a bit. And while you're sitting there, new folks might wander by and sit down, and you get to meet more random folks. And I mean, this just led to some really great interactions that I don't think we would have had otherwise, with game store owners and publishers. And the networking lunches were also really good for scheduling meetups. So during one lunch, I met up with their sponsor, Mark, at one point to have a quick conversation with him. And during another, we both sat down with Danny McKinley from Everyday Board Games to play his new game, Matches. And I don't know where the heck we would have fit that in elsewise, because it was full day.
So as for specific panels, I'm just going to call out some of the ones I attended just to, that were worth attending. So one of the first I went to, this was on Designer Day, was Waking Up Your Design Brain with Matt Fantastic and Kathleen Mercury, where I literally witnessed 9 games be created by the group in the room. And there was a really interesting part of this that I never thought of for anyone hosting a game jam, that everyone had to agree not to now take these games and go publish them without the permission of the other people that were in their groups, which is just something that, like, I wouldn't have even thought of, but obviously has been a problem in the past. I attended a post-mortem panel. This was the head of Asmodee North America and the head of Ravensburger North America, where they talked about what they did wrong. So that was fascinating. That was oriented towards new publishers and designers and what they should be doing. Attended a panel on pitching publishers with Tam and David Gordon, which was great, about how to make a sell sheet and what to present to a publisher, what you want to do if you want someone else to publish your game. Now, all of those were on Designer Day. Designer Day was a very cool thing. This was the first time they did it this year, and I think we're going to say some more about that later. Now, the next day into the main con, there was the awesome keynote from Peter Shankman. What a great speaker. That was fantastic. I went to Partnering with Media and Events with Nicole Brady and Monica Rasso. Nicole is actually the head of our department of Gamma, and we talk to her all the time, where Monica is a part of the events side of things. I went to a panel on FTC rules with an actual lawyer. That was somewhat interesting. And of course, there were tons of retailer presentations from publishers. I went to the Asmodee one. I went to multiple Asmodees. I went to the Asmodee overall, the Asmodee Star Wars Unlimited, the Asmodee Altered, the Ops, Steve Jackson Games, Check Games Edition, and more. I went to quite a few of the retailer presentations and got to hear about some awesome new games, not all of which we're allowed to talk about, unfortunately.
The keynote with Peter Shankman, that was a highlight for me, and him talking about the 1.7 second attention span and how to connect with people, which I know that you, Mo, and I have had a lot of conversations about that, found it really insightful. And it's fueling our current focus on trying to get to the monkey quicker in our podcast episodes. Yeah. I also went to the roadmap on self-publishing. This was on Designer Day. The speaker was Gwen Ruel of Runaway Parade. And that was interesting. She had tons of interesting insights into the industry, and she gave great tips on starting out as a self-published game designer. Obviously, doesn't apply to me, but it was still just fascinating. And then I sat through a 4-hour class on how to use Shopify that was really aimed at retailers and to a lesser extent publishers, but it's something I want to set up on our website at some point. So it was semi-useful. And it was like this detailed step-by-step, like we opened a mock storefront together, created inventory items, and then sold and shipped them over the course of the 4 hours. Like we went through everything. And that was Andrew, and I meant to look up his last name before this, and I didn't, so bad on me. Andrew from Foam Brain Games, who gave 4 hours of his time to run this Shopify seminar. And like, that was the overarching theme of the entire expo. Like, folks were just so generous with their mm-hmm. time, and they really wanted to help out other people in the industry. It was very much like a rising tide floats all boats kind of vibe. I went to a workshop on mental health and wellness and gaming, and it was at 8:30 a.m. in the morning, and I was really questioning why I got out of bed and over to the convention hall so early, but it was definitely worth it. The speaker was Lydia Ray Waymeyer, and she was talking about like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and then she got into how she's developing her own Waymeyer's hierarchy of board gaming needs, which was pretty fascinating. And there was just a ton of insightful folks in the audience, mainly retailers. And there, we ended up having a very interesting discussion around mental health and gaming and how you create safe, welcoming spaces for people. So that was, great. I attended a panel on how to run a convention, another on how to sell used games at your local shop. And both were super packed full of info. And the presenters were just like minefields of knowledge, like, right? And they were very open to being emailed, contacted for questions, sharing slides. The one guy's like, I have this whole system set up for how I sell games, and I will send it to you, and all my Excel files, everything. You're welcome to them. Just, again, very generous vibe. I sat in on a bunch of retailer presentations. I learned about tons of new games coming out.
Now, one of the things you attended that I did not take part in for obvious reasons is you attended the Women in Gaming brunch the one morning, which had us getting up even earlier.
Oh, no, that's true. So yeah, it was like an hour and a half long networking breakfast. It was buffet style. The food was great because the food at the Galt House was quite decent. And there was coffee, lots of coffee. It was, this grew up, I didn't know until I got there that in the past, it started as a small meetup of women retailers. And then over the years, it's been more and more of them meeting together. And this year they were like, where are we going to put, you know, like 50 people for a meeting? And then they decided to open it up to all the women of Gamma, and they made it a charity event that would benefit the local women's shelter. Like, you made a donation to go to the breakfast. So it was cool. It was a great way to meet people. It was a lot of retailers. I sat down at a table where I think I was the only person that didn't own a store. But you know, it was, I hope they do it again next year. It was just a nice way to meet with people.
Well, that's certainly fantastic. And it's great to see that in a hobby that has generally felt antagonistic to females many, many times, that there is such a large and growing presence of women taking ownership of it, not only of playing games, but of, you know, their own safe spaces in retail where, you know, they can say, hey, get out. This is our place.
Overall, there were a lot of women at Gamma. There were mm-hmm. a lot of women in retail, in gaming industry, and in, you know, in all the arms. And I found that when I sat down to demo games, I usually wasn't the only woman at the table. Mm-hmm. So that was nice too.
That's fantastic. And I have to wonder if the retail space, or moving into the retail space, isn't almost a need or a safe path into gaming. Look, I want to be a gamer, so if I have to buy my game store to do it, I'm damn well going to do it because that means I can be in control. And it's horrible that it may have to have gone that way, but it's fantastic that they are able to go that way, and we are able to see more and more safe spaces for all gamers, even if it's been a rough path to get there.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't speak to that.
Now, I will say the other thing that was good to see is the number, the minority presence, the number of BIPOC people, the disabled people, differently abled people. It was a very diverse crowd, which was actually really good to see. And to go along with that, how welcoming Gamma Expo and everyone we saw was to that as well. I didn't see a single problem. Even the local area in Kentucky, like in Louisville, there were no issues that I heard of. I think everything was a very safe space for everyone involved. We saw blind gamers. We saw people in wheelchairs. We saw every shade of skin color. It was really welcoming, open, and we all had something in common, right? We're all gamers gathered together. That just felt great. So the next thing that Gamma wasn't supposed to be for us was a place to get review copies. We were told that doesn't happen here. This is not a place where media go and bring home a bunch of review copies, which is cool. That's not why we went. Again, our main reason to go was for networking, and second was for education. The focus of this con is on publishers connecting with retailers and selling product to game stores, to friendly local game stores. To that end, most publishers are not bringing a ton of games. You don't get the stacks of games built up in various pyramids that you see at a board game convention. Instead, what they are bringing are for retailers, and the only thing you're going to see a ton of are demo copies and display copies that they're giving away. Tended to be smaller display games that companies can put on, you know, by their cash, attention getters, right? As an example, I'll just bring out Gelatinous from Steve Jackson Games, right? Quick, super easy, catches people's eye, under $10 price point game that, boom, there it is, right? That's the kind of thing you see the publishers bring. Due to this, we didn't expect to really come home with anything, really. Like, there was a couple things we set up ahead of time with publishers that we wanted to review a couple things. But what I hadn't planned on, we hadn't planned on, was it's the last day of the show and I don't want to bring this home aspect, which is, it ends up part of Gamma Expo. So due to this and publishers wanting to save on shipping, once we mentioned to us them we were Canadian, we did bring home more than we planned on. But I've got to say, do not, if you are a media person or a reviewer of any type, this isn't Origins. This isn't Gen Con. This is not a show for that. I don't think any media folks should go into Gamma Expo expecting it to be that type of show.
There was definitely, oh, wait, you're in Canada? Will you please take this with you?
Yes.
I don't want to send it to you later.
Yeah, no, unfortunately, international shipping is still painful for everyone involved, but also trade shows in general have tended to be that way. There may be some leftover stock at the end that they aren't going to want to carry back because you got to pay to get it out of the convention hall and back to wherever you're sending it to. But ideally, very little of that, because they really are going in there with mostly giveaways, not sales. So
yes. Yeah. And a lot of the booths, what they do is that they had retailer giveaways where you get a ticket if you stop by their booth or if you place an order or whatever. We happened to witness the Wise Wizard booth give away their entire booth at the end of the weekend. And it was just, you know, here, this store wins this pile of stuff. This store wins this pile of stuff because they don't want to ship it home. So that covers the main reasons we went, the reason we didn't go, but it ended up being a thing anyway. But I want to talk a bit about what we didn't know we were going to get out of Gamma Expo. And again, this is focused on us right now. We'll talk about what everyone else will get out of it in a bit. One of the ones we connect with publishers. We talk to publishers all the time. Publishers are our bread and butter. We have working relationships with publishers. A publisher sponsors this show, who we have a communication with the local game stores, right? Our friendly local game stores. We help some of the stores run local events. I promote their sales. We all kind of work together. What I didn't realize is how useful it would be to network with retailers from around the world. We met with a retailer from Detroit that we're talking about doing a cross collaboration event to try to get some Detroit gamers over here and some Windsor gamers over there. We met with retailers from parts of Texas I've never even heard of. And it just, getting to hear the retailer perspective was very fascinating to me. And it felt like there's like a missed opportunity, that there are more opportunity for retailers to work with media, which is something like, I don't know what we're going to do with this information, but it wasn't something I expected.
Yeah, no, that was a surprise going in there. And I think, and again, like we have no way of marketing this, but a number of retailers really enjoyed sitting down with Mo, picking his brain and finding out what they need to order in 2024. They're like, they start off just having a polite conversation and then it moves to I'm going to get a notepad out. And how did you spell that game?
Well, it's interesting because I think while a lot of the retail market is driven by trade shows like Gamma, where the publishers get up and say, we think that this game is going to sell this much, we're publishing this many, we're rolling out this marketing plan, and so you should get behind us and be part of our marketing steamroll. What doesn't happen is, hey, did you hear about this really cool game? They're from a small publisher, but they are getting picked up by and localized by this company. And everyone I've ever shown it to has gone crazy for it. It's that grassroots information mm-hmm. that the retailers aren't getting from cons like their trade shows like this. Because again, the reason this show exists is for publishers to say, this is what we think you should back. This is how many units you should be buying of this in order to support our marketing thing. And the fact mm-hmm. that Trick Draw is this cool little game that's just suddenly been picked up by whoever it was picked up by and is, you know, getting a wider release than
House Games Publishing.
Than House Fish Balloon ever could have. Well, you know what? That's really interesting for retailers to know, because why would they ever pick up Trick Draw without hearing about it?
And also, no. Like, we're sitting there saying, hey, we want to tell you about our favorite game from 2022. You know, it's not the thing that just came out, but
anyway, yes,
that's neither here nor there.
That is definitely part of it, too, because Gamma Expo, this is the publisher generally showing off their new hotness and what's coming later in the year, right? And they're looking for pre-orders, right? That's what they're there to do. They assume the retailers already know their past catalog because they were at Gamma last year when they talked about that game, or 5 years ago. So yeah, we have, obviously, our show in particular has a different focus. It's not always about the new hotness. But in general, pretty much every retailer we talked to just kind of went away with the feeling, you know, we should listen to more podcasts, which for us just meant handing over a business card. My line for almost everyone I talked to is looking for something to listen to on the ride home. Here's our card and here's where you can find our podcast. Now, another part of the show that was fascinating to me was learning more behind the scenes stuff, industry stuff, hearing all kinds of stuff that we're not allowed to talk about. I'll admit that part's a little frustrating. And the every person we had to take pictures of, we had to ask them, is it okay to share this online? Because some of the stuff they're showing is under embargoes. It hasn't been announced yet. I know way more about Star Wars Unlimited than I can tell you about here, right? There's a lot going on. It was interesting to see that. And then hearing some of the other things, right? So the publisher's perspective on the changing industry and retail stores and what they did to twist during COVID to stay in business, and just the overall changing market and the way the game industry has been changing. And amazingly, the whole weekend, I didn't hear a single conversation about AI art, which is honestly kind of relieving. But it was more focused on things that were going on. And we mentioned this a bit last week, but one of them is a drive for most of the major publishers to put out a line of games for the mass market, because there is no middle store anymore. It used to be you had your big box stores, your Walmart, Kmart, Target, Meijer, and then you had a middle store, the toy store, the KB Toys, the hobby store, the Leisure World, like a middle.
Toys R Us in the States, which we still have here, but they don't elsewhere.
Yeah, Toys R Us in the States. That middle, like, place you go to buy games specifically, or puzzles, or things like games. And then you had the hobby game stores, your local game stores. Well, that middle's gone. And what it's meaning for publishers is that they're having to branch out in order to survive to target that mass market Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart. Barnes & Noble to Target, Walmart are the big three, it ends up, at least in the U.S. And I assume it's probably similar here for some of those stores. And hearing how many companies are now releasing games to fit that market? Like, we're kind of shocked to go to the Wise Wizard Games booth and get shown a party game. But that's because they launched a new brand, Wacky Wizard Games, to hit that market. Even Mark from Grand Gamers Guild has put out a Barnes & Noble exclusion version of Garinto, right? Like, we're seeing it all over the industry, and it was really interesting to be there, like, not on the ground floor, but on the floor hearing this happen live.
Yeah, I definitely saw a trend in like welcoming games, welcome mat games that are designed to bring people into the hobby. And hearing publishers say that we are putting a focus on this type of game, I heard it in more than one from more than one publisher during their presentations.
Yeah, it's easy to underestimate the importance that the KB Toys and Toys R Us's had, because a lot of the time we would think of it as hobby gamers. We would think of it as just more mass market games, except that's the key, is it's more mass market games.
Yeah.
The shelf space at Walmart for board games and Barnes & Noble especially is significantly limited compared mm-hmm. to a Toys R Us, where they might have had an aisle or even two aisles dedicated to toys and puzzles and games. And so you need to have a much more narrow focus on a specific detailed market of, you know, mom and dad going to the big box store or catching the kid's eye to make mom and dad buy something from the big box store, as opposed to people who are looking for games in a large selection.
So another surprise that we hadn't heard about leading into Gamma Expo, and something we got to see firsthand, is something called the Horizons Fellowship. I thought that was one of the coolest things I've ever heard of. This is a mentorship program, 8-month mentorship program, specifically designed for minorities. By going through the program, the end result is you get a booth at Gamma where you get to sell and show off your game to a local game stores and for people, media like us, to hear about your games and talk about them for you and to make those relationships. And we got a special Horizon Fellowship media tour. There we got to stop at each booth before the actual hall was open, which was awesome, just to get to see these games that probably wouldn't exist without the fellowship. So that is like the Horizons Fellowship is technically a Gamma thing, but it's tied into Gamma Expo.
It's a pretty cool program. And there were some great games that were coming out of it. They were all grouped together in the expo hall. So you can kind of walk down the Horizons Fellowship area in the one section, and there was a lot of cool stuff down there, which we did. I think when we talked about them last week, we highlighted which ones were from the Horizon Fellowship. But there was BubbleNet was one of them, and Bunny Moon, and which is from Hot Banana Games, which did Steam Up. And there was Dekuma, which is the like tabletop RPG toolkit. Like, there's just a bunch of really cool stuff.
Yeah. Those are some of the ones that caught my eye that like shocked me, right? Like not shocked, like, oh my God, just, I didn't know this was going to be part of our experience. Is there anything that you saw that you didn't expect?
Okay. Overall, I was surprised by, how exhausted I was, how it went from 8 a.m. till midnight. And it really went from 8 a.m. to midnight. You would be missing things if you weren't there. How retailer focused it was. How the percentage of attendees that were retailers, like I don't have stats on that, but just based on, you know, blindly in a line in the lunchroom, wherever I met people, you know, it seemed like 8.5 out of 10 people were retailers. Yeah. That was, I guess I should have expected that. It wasn't bad. It was just a surprise to me. Yeah.
So I think overall, I think we're coming to the agreement that as the tabletop bellhop, it was definitely worth having a presence there.
Yeah, definitely. Like the biggest thing, the big vibe of the entire show was collaboration, right? It was a bunch of game industry insiders all trying to help each other out and like going to extreme lengths in some case just to help out the little guy. And it, like the sense of collaboration was humbling, I think is the proper word. I left feeling we could do better. Everyone there is there to help each other and improve the industry. And being part of that felt awesome. Like we had a great time. We met great people. We learned things. I don't think either of us attended a single panel where we didn't learn something. And in most cases, that was many things. Like I left that show energized and wanting to do more and be better.
And I think that's actually one of the big differences between a convention and a trade show. Through my job, I have been to a lot of both of them. Not usually in any industry I'm actually involved in, but you get to see what's going on and you get to feel the vibe. And that's something I've always sort of seen is that the trade show, you're trading. Everyone is trading information, trading product, trading knowledge. To improve the entire industry as a whole. And yet when you get to a con, you're trying to sell stuff to people. And there is a level of competition there because there's only so much money walking the floor and you want that person to give you their money, not give their money to someone else. And that's the real difference you find between that trade show and convention sort of vibe. And it's interesting to see that is exactly sort of what you guys felt on the floor there.
And I'm sure Deanna agrees with me. Like, I can't see not going back. I would feel so bad missing out on this experience again.
It was amazing. I am so glad we went. And I know it was like it being in Louisville and my brother lives in Louisville. That was a part of why we decided to go because it was easy. It was a close drive. I have relatives there. And I'm so glad that swayed us into going.
Yeah, it's a much closer than Nevada, that's for sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's in Louisville for 4 years?
Three total, so two more years, I think.
Two more years, for sure. There's a chance he'll extend it. We haven't called it out yet, but like in general, Louisville was great for hosting it. Many of the restaurants hired staff that week. We got to meet many new servers who started that day to handle the crowds. They obviously weren't prepared for, I don't know if it's just that big a convention or if it's gamers like food and eat a lot. There is a stereotype there. But yeah, they handled it well. The Gamma did a great job being in a new venue. That did not feel like a new venue, except for the fact that everyone who had gone to multiple Gamma's expos were talking about how it was different. But like, it didn't feel like a new place.
That's true. Like there was, it felt pretty smooth. It didn't feel like they were trying to break in a new place. And, you know, if there were issues, we weren't seeing them.
No, it wasn't perfect. I'm not trying to say it was perfect. Everything has its bumps, but I think overall it went really well.
I've been to multi-million dollar shows and they aren't perfect either. So
yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, I think that gives everyone a pretty good idea of what we, or at least you two, we as the group got out of attending Gamma Expo. Next up, we're going to discuss the six different arms of Gamma, why folks would want to join and why they would want to attend Gamma Expo.
All right. Since there are six arms of Gamma, I think a good way to talk about what other people can get out of Gamma Expo is to point out what each different arm can get out of going to this trade show, because the arms at least are meant to be all encompassing for all types of gamers. Now, again, though, this is game industry insiders. There's no category just for gamers. There's lots of reasons gamers may want to attend, but you can't attend just as a gamer, as we talked about earlier. So I'm going to start with creators. Creators, according to Gamma, are individuals or small studios who make a living as an author, artist, graphic designer, game developer, small run producer. No, make a living doesn't necessarily mean it's your only job or it's a full-time job, but you do earn an income and you are trying to be serious about it, right? You're not just a hobbyist. You are a creator who is looking to sell your product. Now, the big things, designers, the group, the designer part of creators, which covers a lot of them, is to look at Designer Day. Designer Day was amazing. This year, 2024, was the first year they ever had a designer, because creators are actually a new arm of Gamma. So this was Gamma trying to expand to Gamma as in Gamma, not Gamma Expo. The Game Manufacturers Association expand to be more useful to creatives. And it was a huge hit. It was a massive hit. It was extremely popular and way more popular than they expected. Now, we talked about how there were some bumps. This is probably the biggest bump of the entire con, is they did not expect the turnout for Designer Day. And there wasn't the best communication at the beginning on who was allowed to attend, who wasn't attended, who was a designer, who should have been there. It was a bit of a mess. But honestly, first year they ever did it, they reacted very quickly. They managed to get extra rooms from the Galt House. Like, they did a great job of accommodating more people than they planned on. Now, Designer Day, I encourage every designer out there, no matter how small or how incomplete your game is, to watch for this. Look at what they're going to be doing next year, because this is the one part of Gamma that was open to anyone. You didn't have to be a Gamma member. You just had to be a designer. You didn't even have to be a non-voting member. Plus, if you went to Designer Day and you showed off your game in the prototype hall, you got free passes to the rest of the con. To me, that's worth it alone, but the invaluable insight you are going to learn going to these panels that we attended and just being able to set up in the prototype room and interact with publishers, retailers, and media, and most importantly, other designers is, to me, invaluable.
Yeah, they invited 100 designers to come and take part in this pre-Gamma Expo designer workshop day. And it was sponsored, I think, by Asmodee. So they also got in for free for the rest of the event. Now, next year, assuming they do Designer Day again, and I hope they do, I don't know for certain that you would get in for free. I know they were trying to promote to designers how great Gamma is and why you would want to purchase a membership. So, you know, they're also talking about possibly folding Designer Day in, not as a pre-day, but as just part of the overall expo. Definitely people showed up and they weren't signed up and just thought, since they were there for the expo, they could come attend Designer Day and they hadn't accounted on how many people would be interested in it. Like Mo said, it was a bit of a mess, right? But it was so cool. I mean, we got to go in, even though we weren't designers, because we were there as media. And it's just, you go in, there's this big demo room at the beginning of the day, and there's this room full of excited people with all these cool games that are in various stages of completion, from, you know, super polished finished games to just sketched out prototypes and everything you can imagine in between. And there's just so much collaboration going on between people. And there was really a focus on designers networking with publishers to get their game seen. And they had this cool wristband system with different colors to signify if you're a designer or a publisher or looking to hire. And then there was a mixer in the evening too, where people got to chat and show some people were demoing games, but it was a lot of people standing around talking. It was a lot of people standing around awkwardly and talking, as humans do at mixers. But yes, it was also a great way to meet people and network. If you're a designer, you should be there. If they do that next year, go. The seminars that I sat in on, I talked about the one earlier, they were phenomenal.
It's interesting because, like, one of those things that people don't really think about is it makes a lot of sense. If you're a designer, of course you want to meet other designers. Of course you want to meet publishers. That's kind of where you expect your bread and butter to be. Except retailers also have some really valuable opinions to offer to game designers. Retailers are the ones who know what helps games move off their shelf, what they can sell easier, you know, what kinds of thing people are looking for currently in games. And that kind of frontline industry information can really benefit a game's design. You may not decide to change, you want to change everything, but you may lean in one direction or another if all of a sudden 20 retailers tell you that, oh, if you did this, I could sell your game in a heartbeat.
And to be fair, I heard over the weekend, I can't sell this, or I could sell this in an instant. Like, I heard both. I'm not going to mention specific games, but, like, I literally heard retailers providing that feedback to publishers, but more importantly, designers. Next up is one I already mentioned, but this is also for creatives, and that is the Horizons Fellowship Mentorship Program. Now, again, this is for BIPOC and minority creators. I did notice a question from our chat room from our local blind meeple that I'm going to have to look up once we get to the AMA. This is specifically designed to address the needs of communities that have been historically underrepresented in the tabletop industry. And we think this is fantastic.
Yeah, as I already said, very cool program. And there's some great games coming out of that.
Next, this is a place for creators to meet with publishers directly. Every publisher we talked to was accepting pitches. This was a pitch show. So not only is the publisher looking for new game stores to carry their product, they're looking for new games to add to their game lines. Now, for the most part, this involves scheduled meetings during exhibit hall hours, but I know there were meetings all over the place. The networking lunch was great for this. There were meetings happening everywhere you looked. You went around a corner, there were two people sitting actively engaged in some type of communication. Now, some publishers were also accepting unscheduled meetings at their booths. But if you are a content creator of any type, whether that's game designer or artist, I do recommend scheduling something ahead of time. And like I said, this is game pitches, but also artists looking for works, a miniature sculptor trying to talk to games about designing their next miniatures. I saw a 3D printing company looking to do licensed box inserts and meeting with different publishers talking about making inserts for their next games. Creative doesn't necessarily just mean game designer in this case.
Yeah, obviously it was not what we were there for, but this is definitely the place to be if you want to pitch your game or look for work in the industry.
Now, it's also a place where creators who are looking to self-publish can connect with manufacturers. So that leads me to the next arm of Gamma, which is the production arm. This is the game manufacturers, and there were a surprising number present. I was actually kind of surprised by how many. Now, they were looking to connect with creators and publishers, and I've got to say they had the shiniest booths. I don't know if they were the ones that had the most to gain from this, but if you did want somewhere to relax and sit in a nice comfy chair and have a cookie and a coffee and chat, you need to pitch to a game manufacturer. Now, if you're looking for someone to make your game or someone to create the components for your game or any of that, design rule books, these are the people to talk to. Now, again, this is not where we were there for, so I can't really speak any more to the actual experience of meeting with a manufacturer.
Yeah, you're not wrong. They had the shiniest booths and all the neatest components laid out.
Yeah, these are the guys who at all the trade shows, it's those manufacturers who tend to be the real money makers behind it. Nothing can get done if you can't make your product, whatever industry you may be in. So, the manufacturers have a thing. But there's also a large competitive sign to it. You know, there's that, there is the whole industry in Shenzhen, China. And there are, the North American industry trying to fight back against foreign, industries and all the different various things going on. You know, you have to have your game printed in Germany if you want to take part in the spiel and all the various little ins and outs of game manufacturing that happen and are very opaque to us on this end of the industry, but are very, very important to the industry as a whole.
And I will say that the one thing you called out there was definitely true there. The entire world was represented, I would say, from the manufacturing arm of Gamma. All right. The next arm I want to talk about is publishers. And of course, the main reason publishers are going to attend Gamma Expo is to sell games to retailers. As far as I could tell, every publisher there was looking to do sales and take orders on site, bulk orders to retail stores, pre-orders, and so on. Now, to encourage this, something I didn't realize was part of Gamma Expo and something to be aware of if you are a retailer, is that Gamma Expo discounts were definitely a thing. Pretty much every publisher we saw was offering if you order today, if you order during the show, we'll do something whatever. I don't want to talk numbers here because I don't know if that's something I can publicly even share, but bonuses, promos, extra copies, discounts, and so on. Now, also, this is a great chance for publishers to show off their new hotness, their new upcoming games, their new schedule. Everywhere wanted to hand us a 2024 release schedule. Every booth we went to, the first thing they were leading with the paper until we said media, and then they still wanted us to take it so we knew what was coming from their company. That is the main thing the publishers are there for.
Yeah, the publishers are there to take orders and pre-orders and sell games. And this is definitely the main focus of Gamma Expo. It's to connect the publishers with retailers.
The discounts are not a big shock. Again, these publishers are trying to establish numbers. If you can get a hard copy, a hard figure for how many games you think you can sell and how many games you need to manufacture as far out as possible, that's way better for your bottom line. You can really work your margins better that way. So, we'll give away a little something so that we can get some hard numbers in the books as early as possible.
Now, for publishers, Gamma Expo is also a place where you can sign new games. You can meet with creatives. You can hire a new art director. It's also a place where you can meet with manufacturers. So it wasn't just, the retailers talking to the publishers. The publishers are talking to the wholesalers. There were more big name publishers at Gamma Expo than we've actually seen at Origins. And it seems like, honestly, if you're a publisher, you like Gamma Expo is not optional. Like I think to be an effective publisher in the modern game industry, you have to be there. Now, most have booths where in the exhibit hall where they can show off their games, but there were a number of publishers who didn't have a booth at all, but were still presence. For example, Paverson Games, there was no booth, but David Beck was there making connections and having meetings. A better example, Queen Games. Queen Games, Travis was there walking around talking to people, but Queen Games was not there with a booth.
I think they had over 300 booths in the expo hall. There was a lot of publishers there. I think some of the bigger distributors, like PSI, for example, they had a bunch of companies that they are the distributor for showcasing their stuff at the PSI booth. Mm-hmm. So like, for example, there was no Grand Gamers Guild booth, but they were at PSI.
Yeah, and there was a lot of that. Long Pack Games had the same thing. Quite a few of the warehousing arm had multiple publishers under them that were using their booth to display.
Now, this is quite possibly something you guys had no view into, but I know what does happen a lot of these trade shows is that there are rooms elsewhere, whether either in the hotel or, small little rooms elsewhere where a lot of the actual deals get handled. There's a lot of handshaking on the trade show floor, but the real deals are done in rooms elsewhere other than that trade show floor.
Yeah, and the big publishers had rooms, like they had dedicated rooms. If you wanted to have a meeting with Asmodee, you could go on this floor, but Asmodee had a rather large room. Upper Deck had a rather large room. Games Workshop had a hall. Now that leads me to retailers, which I think is pretty obvious. You go to Gamma Expo to find out about new games and connect directly with publishers. which nowadays is more and more important with the changes in the global supply chain and the decline of the distribution model. That was a big push I saw from publishers talking to retailers, was let's cut out the middleman. You want to order direct from us, and here's why.
Yeah, it was interesting just to see just how much direct to publisher purchasing was going on. Like, we're not in the retail side of things. I know nothing. But based on the seminars I attended, retailers were definitely also there to learn. There was definitely retailers that came to Gamma specifically to attend the seminars. And like we said, the seminars were good. They were not filler. There's also a big retailer's box of goodies that they send them home with games from tons of publishers.
Yeah, and this is a tough one because, again, not only is the distributor situation evolving, and I know we got a question in our chat already about that, and I don't know if you guys know anything about that particular market, but one of the we've talked in great detail, and I won't give my opinions on Kickstarter and retailers purchasing from Kickstarter and the need in some cases for retailers to purchase from Kickstarter. But there's a whole, it is a very changing world. It used to be you could run a game store, you'd call up your distributor, get the new games, and you'd be good. Everything's happy. And you can't do that anymore because you are just going to be missing out on too much product. And the real hobby gamers, the ones who want to support their FLGS, are going to vote with their money and go elsewhere. And when there is someone like Amazon in competition with you, you need to understand the market and offer something more than a game. Because I can get that game tomorrow in the States. I might even be able to get that game the same day from Amazon. So why am I going to my FLGS? There's lots of good reasons to. You just have to make sure that your store has some of those reasons and you're not just relying on a distributor to give you a bunch of games, put them up on the walls, and I'm here in your town, so you'll come and buy from me. Yeah, that doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, there's a, like, again, Gamma Expo started as a retailer meat publisher, right? And technically the warehousing part's part of that as well, the warehousing and manufacturing, but the producer and manufacturing. But everything was kind of designed about retail. It was more than I expected. Like, there's a track where retailers actually have to attend these specific presentations. And at the end, they have to stay till the very end. They get code words. And then they have to put the code words into an app. And that lets them get their exclusive retailer package. So that's a little kind of inside ballgame, some sausage making of part of what goes on. Now, I know it was the same thing at Origins. Origins had the trade day that happened before Origins. It was the same deal. Now, I don't know. I'm not a retailer. I don't know what was in this box. I don't know what people got, if it was worth it or anything else. But I will say that this was definitely a thing that the retailers were had to attend. Like, that was part of attending Gamma. And I think that's tied to the sponsorship level Sean was talking about earlier. Now, many of these presentations are retailer only. And many of them have inside information that is not open to the public. So this is where retailers will get to hear about upcoming games and expansions that haven't even been announced. Stuff like, how Board Game Geek's usually really good to have at least a no image present link to a game? No, we got to hear about stuff that not even on Board Game Geek yet, right?
I think if you're a retailer and you're curious what was in that retailer package, it actually lists it on the Gamma Expo webpage. So you could see, to get an idea.
Yeah.
If that is the thing that entices you to go next year. I sat in on some of those retailer only panels because no one told me I wasn't supposed to be there. So oops on that.
Same. Yeah,
this is a tough one because I think longtime listeners of the show have heard Mo rant and rave about embargoes on media. We're not allowed to talk about the new hotness until July 9th because that's the day we want everyone to talk about the new hotness and how much we hate that. Well, this is very different because this game doesn't exist until Q2 2025, but we want you to know about it because we want you to be invested in selling tiers 1 through 3 of game XYZ and what people will be getting themselves into going forward. This is why we want you selling and pushing this game. And we think it's worth supporting this game because we have this long-term rollout planned.
Yes.
And
there was a lot of schedule.
And I'm saying this because I'm the one talking about this because I wasn't there. I don't know any of this information, so I can't actually slip and let anything slide. Whereas these
you
two,
can't screw up. Yeah.
Yeah. These two know no information that we are not allowed to be privy to. We of the humble public.
There was a lot of publishers proving, look, we're taking this seriously. I think is a way to put it.
Yeah. You don't want to be. You don't want to be the Google messaging app of board games.
I know things that I'm not meant to know. No, one of the interesting insights for me was they were talking about release date schedules. They emailed them out to stores and retailers. And I was like, hey, publishers, I want release date schedules. I would love to know when games come back into print. And I don't think I'm the only media person that would like to know that. So after that, I actually went around to publishers, and each publisher I talked to, I was like, you should include this information for media. We like knowing things. But... that was one of the big insights I had from being in the retailer thing. Another one, which please stop me if I'm not supposed to say this, Mo, but CGE, now all of their games are just evergreen. Like they have maybe one that they said that they were axing in the upcoming year, but if they have a game, it's always available, always in print. So, and not every company does that. So that's just interesting to know that, you know, if there's a CGE, it's going to be there. You're not going to see Fantahorna hopping in and out of print and not being available for 6 months, you know? So that was interesting to know.
Well, one of the big announcements was, I'm sure I can talk about, is CGE purchased their manufacturer in order to keep their games constantly in print, which is something they're very proud of, which actually, good job.
Yeah, no, if you can, if you own your manufacturing, then you don't have to worry about, you know, oh, suddenly Ravensburger swooped in and took over a six month chunk of manufacturing that we can't get our games made in. So that's a very interesting one. But no, it's really interesting about that release date information, because the release date information does tend to come out as a sort of a private. We don't want anyone to know. Where that's fantastic to know about. I think we've seen some traction with Mo talking about the Tuesday release schedule. It's sort of like your comic pull list that comes out on Tuesdays. Mm-hmm. Well, there's the game store pull list that comes out as well. And it would be nice to know that before Tuesday when the game's dropped in your local retail store.
And for us, one of the big things for us, and this is what Dana would point out to everyone, you can take this if you want, Dee. But it's the fact we produce evergreen content, right? So if I publish a review of a great board game and it goes out of print, I feel bad because anyone who goes for our review is going to click and not be able to get the game. So that kind of stinks. But more importantly, when that game comes back in print, we can republish that review. We can be like, hey, check it out. New print run of Garento's on store shelves now. Check out our review.
I like knowing that stuff's back in print. That's the one that's really important to me for the release schedules. I like knowing that something that hasn't been available for 6 months is suddenly back in print and you can get it now. And then we don't have to feel so bad that we had it on our recommendation list 2 weeks ago that Mo thought it was in print and it wasn't. So
yeah, and there's a lot of that weird stuff where it's like Ice Cool or Cool Whiz, whatever the new version of Ice Cool was. Is it in print? Is it not in print? It was so weird trying to figure that out the other day where, you know, if we actually have some information from the publishers themselves, we wouldn't have that same question.
Yeah, that was one of the, again, some of the things we didn't expect to get out of Gamma Expo was that direct line to a publisher about ways we can work together better. That isn't just we review your game. That was actually a big focus that became a priority of ours by the end of the week. And something when we go next year will be at the front, right? That's something that's going to change that we learned is something we should be approaching publishers with that mindset. All right, jumping back to why retailers should go. The one I already mentioned, discounts on games. I don't know if retailers know this. Like, is that a secret? I don't think it's supposed to be like a secret. You're not supposed to know you get discounts at Gamma. But like, do general local game stores know this is a thing? Like, you can save money by going to Gamma Expo and signing contracts and ordering stuff right there off the store floor. So to me, if I was a retailer, that seems like a huge draw to me.
So the next term is wholesalers, which also includes distribution. Similar to production, wholesalers go to Gamma to get new clients. The big thing being that they have both ends of the chain here in one place. You got your publishers and retailers in the same room. Now, this is a side of the industry that we know nothing about, so I think I'm going to leave it at that.
So finally, we have media and events arm of Gamma, and I think we've already covered why any media group would want to attend by sharing what we got out of the show. But there's also the event side of things, so I want to kind of highlight that one. Now, events is for people who host events, who host local game nights. It can be that small. who run conventions, who do meetup groups, people who, it doesn't even have to be game nights specifically. It can be mentorship programs or anyone who does an unpub or a game jam, right? This is a broad range of gaming events. For them, Gamma Expo is a place to meet with all levels of the industry from start to finish. If you want a publisher to get a booth at your con, you can meet up at Gamma Expo. If you want the head of Ravensburger to meet with your group and speak about the barriers to entry in the industry, you can meet them at Gamma Expo and set this up. If you want to learn how to connect with media, all you had to do was attend the Working with Media panel at Gamma Expo, and so on. There were just so many opportunities for someone who hosts events. And this was another shock to me. Here I am repping Tabletop Bellhop, our podcast, our reviews, our answering game night questions, the fact we're the Dear Abby of gaming. That is what we're there for. Meanwhile, I'm learning all kinds of things about how I can better our local events, which was awesome. Like, it's an aspect of Gamma that I didn't even think of approaching, right? Like, it wasn't even in my head as something I could use and learn from.
And from an educational aspect, I didn't touch on it because these are the panels that I skipped over because we can't be five places at once, but there was a lot of PR and marketing panels and learning how to market your event or your product that sounded really fascinating. And I heard really good feedback from people that did attend them.
And on top of that, not only are you getting that benefit, when good PR and good marketing lessons are invaluable. And just look at the wealth of them you got to pay for on the online these days. But also the fact that you, as an organizer of an event, of any size event, can meet with publishers is a huge thing. Because one thing that can make your event stronger is direct tie-ins with manufacturers, whether it's giveaways, whether it's sample copies, whether it's, you know, building up your library, your game library, your local game library for your event. And if you send an email to a publisher, that's really easy to ignore or really easy to overlook the importance of what you may be doing. But when you sit there and you shake someone's hand and you talk to them with the heart of, you know, what you're really doing and what you're trying to do in your community and why you're doing it, and really sell that person, it's a lot easier to walk away with an agreement and that can help both of you, both the publisher getting their games out into people's hands more and you as a event host getting more content and important new hotness out there for your events.
Plus, just attending Gamma Expo, thus being a member of Gamma as an organization, gives you legitimacy. You obviously take your event seriously if you're willing to travel to Louisville to meet with people about it versus someone who's just, you know, trying to put on a con, not really knowing what they're doing.
I feel like being there, meeting all those people and discovering how everyone's willing to work together, you also realize that those Gamma membership indexes, lists on the website are super useful, and you can go reach out to those people and they actually probably do want to talk to you.
So overall, it was fascinating attending Gamma Expo for the first time. In some ways, it was exactly what I expected. I fully expected this to be a retailer focused show with publishers showing off their best and brightest and their new toys to retailers. But overall, it was so much more. It very much felt like a gathering of equals, a group of game industry insiders who all have something in common, a love of games and the desire to make the gaming industry as a whole better.
That's what it was. I gained a ton of great insights. I can't think of a moment I spent there that wasn't valuable. I had so many different perspectives in the industry, and overall, I just left super fired up and excited to be part of this.
Yeah, no, and that's fantastic. But while we've been talking, we have gotten a little bit of questions from our lobbyists. And I think one of the first ones, which is interesting that we didn't talk about, I wasn't even sure if we were or not, but what sort of networking within the media branch was there? How many other media people did you talk to? Were there events focused on media for media?
It was so-so. Overall, when we met media here and there and ran into them, we had some good connections. The actual media networking event that they set up was in a seminar room, and there was kind of chairs everywhere, and we sat down and there was a little presentation on things we should and shouldn't do there as media, which is good. It's important information that we all needed. And then they're like, now we want you to mix. And there's chairs in the way and people are trying to stand up and mix. And it was it was awkward. It was not one of the highlights of the event for me. So that's kind of why we skipped over it.
Media and events is still new with Gamma in general. And having media and events at Gamma Expo was obviously still new. Sean got to witness some of that at Origins. Some of that carried over. They are working diligently to try to make it more of an event for media people. There was not a lot of things specifically dedicated to media. The Horizon Fellowship Tour was a fantastic thing. More of that would be great. That was awesome. They let us get in the exhibit hall half an hour early, and we got to meet with each of the Horizon Fellowship members who each had 5 minutes or whatever to pitch us their games and talk about it, and we could record video, and people were taking pictures. That was great. The media mixer was a bit of a mess. That's what Deanna just talked about. And it kind of felt like we were the outliers. So like there's one night, there's two big parties going on. There's one for retailers and there's one for publishers. There's nothing for media. So we asked, which one are we supposed to go to? And they're like, neither. One's for retailers and one's for publishers. I'm like, okay, how about to at least cover the event so we can like, you know, go in, take pictures, find out what's about and let other people know if they should attend. They're like, yeah, I guess. Right. So there was a lot of they didn't know what to do with us, I think is a good way to put it. I was pushy. I played press. I walked up and said, I'm media events. And they're like, you can't come in. And I'm like, but look, I'm host of media. They're paying for me to be here. Let me go in and cover the event so I can share about it to get people excited to come next year. Like, OK, go ahead. Right. I did that a lot. I forced my way into things. Some things maybe I shouldn't have gotten into, but that's some of those bumps we were talking about earlier. Media could definitely be served better. As for networking with other media, we hung out with the group from Everyday Board Games quite a bit, which was awesome. We hung out with Andrew from The Family Gamers quite a bit. Mm-hmm. We ran into some big names in the industry. Becca Scott is much shorter than in real life than I expected, for example. Everything was amicable, but like there was no, hey, let's all go have breakfast together. Let's all have coffee together. There was like the one little room where we were kind of like, here, go mingle. And no one expected it. And no one knew what to do. I would like to see the media event expanded more. Now, one of the things they are doing is making use of their media events group. So instead of bringing in outsiders to cover the event, they sourced their own people like us, which I actually think is great. Like that just makes sense, right? We're all Gamma members. Let's use each other's strengths where we can. Who better to cover a Gamma event than the Gamma media and events arm?
Some people might argue about a little bit of the imbalance there, but I think again, if we're going to be media, we need to be neutral about it, and
right.
We need to be able to kick a little mud around if it's there. And we talked about this during Origins. The media and events arm is brand new. They added it in. I think they saw that there was a gap. There was a need for this branch of Gamma. And they ran out there and they tacked it on and didn't necessarily plan fully in advance before doing that. And so they are in real fact making it up as they go along. Yeah. And so, you know, we had some growing pains during Origins. I'm sure it will be better this year. They've had some growing pains during Gamma. Let's hope it'll be better next year. And, you know, they're learning from as they go. It would have been nice to have a little bit of planning done rather than learning on as they go. But, you know, I'll take it however it comes. I think we're definitely getting some benefit out of it. Got another question here from Darkling Blight. How do you think being under an NDA and having some advanced knowledge of future releases might affect your reviews for games? For example, not liking a game as much because you know another game is coming out later that has a theme you might like more or plays shorter or something.
I didn't see anything like that, so that's hard to answer.
Yeah, I'm thinking nothing that we saw that we're not supposed to talk about would apply in any way, shape, or form. If it did, would it affect my opinion on games we're reviewing? I honestly don't know.
I think it would for me just in I've talked about this on the show multiple times where I hate when a new edition comes out for something when I haven't played the original yet or haven't mm-hmm. played it enough. A great example of that is for Christmas this year, I got the, I'm going to get the name wrong, the new Star Trek role-playing game because I don't remember the name of it right now. I got the tricorder set with the original series and it's a box set, but it looks like a tricorder. It's awesome. But I know there's a new edition of the game coming out that's all reworked. And it's backwards compatible. Well, that makes me not want to play with my tricorder. Like, if I'm going to jump in on this game, why don't I wait for the new edition? So I could see that definitely being a thing for me. The other thing, though, with us specifically, and this may not apply to all content creators, our focus always has been to provide you facts, to provide you information on the game, who published it, when it came out, who the artist is, the play time, an overview of gameplay. Then we talk about what we think about the game, which matters to some people, I'm sure, matters to us. But then we share who we think would enjoy the game. And because of that, I can't see how knowing about a future thing is going to change anything but that little part where we change our opinion.
The same people are going to like or not like a game, regardless of what is coming out later. And then doubling down on that, the fact that we are, as we have said many times, not about the new hotness. A game from 2021 is going to be less impacted by a game coming out in 2025 that we may or may not know about. Right.
That's true.
There's definitely a balance there. And then another, and I know this isn't ideal because we would like Sean to go to Gamma Expo next year. I don't know about all the new fancy new stuff. So we have both sides of that opinion available to us because I don't have that advanced knowledge. It isn't going to color my thoughts on the game and my plays of the game to the same degree. Even if they do, we may or may not have talked about some of this stuff off record. But again, I wasn't there. I didn't experience it. The knowledge is not the same in any way. And so while it may affect them, it almost can't affect me. So we get a balance that way.
Sean knows nothing.
All right. Next up, Ryan was asking whether or not persons with disabilities qualify under minorities under that Horizons program. I did a quick look as I was, as we were talking, and I couldn't see anything, obviously. So I don't know if, Mo, you've got anything available.
So businesses that are at least 51% owned and or operated by members of historically underrepresented communities based on but not limited to race, ethnicity, gender, sexual orientation, religion, and ability are able to apply. And I think that and ability is where that would fall in. More about Horizon Fellowship, because here's a part we did not see. Everyone we saw that was part of the Horizons Fellowship that was at Gamma Expo were publishers. This is also a program open to retailers. So if you are a minority-owned store, or thinking of opening one, you are eligible for the Horizon Fellowship. And I could get into everything you get out of it. If you go to gamma.org/page/horizons, you will be able to get all that information, including everything you will get if you are accepted into the program. Note, you must be in the United States or Canada. Now, that's awesome for us because Canada, yay. But this is currently just located to the northern part of North America.
Okay, well, here's one that I know Dee can probably talk about for no end of time. We'll cut her off if it gets too ugly. Is it easy to find a hotel room at the same venue? Asks Roger.
Yeah, I'll take this one. Okay, so the events were held at the Galt House, and the rooms that they and the let me back this up. So events were held at the Galt House,
back up
and
they a were sec.
Also held at the KICC. Which is the big convention center in downtown Louisville. Okay.
Kentucky International Convention Center, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
All right. It was a short walk between the two, like maybe 8 minutes. It's not bad. Okay. But it was not all in one place. So that's the first thing to know. When they released the hotel block, they released hotel rooms at the Galt. And it was just like Origins. You have to pay attention to when they release the hotel block and you go buy them right away. I was able to get a reservation immediately, and I was able to get the nights that we wanted. There was some difficulty with the code working at first, but they ironed it out. Again, I think that might have been the growing pains of them being at a new venue. So I had a room at the Galt House. We ended up canceling that reservation because we came as hosted media, and we stayed at the Hampton Inn because that is the room that they gave us.
Yep.
Other people stayed at the Aloft Hotel, which was, and I can't remember, there was a third one. And they had a shuttle bus running between them to get you to and from the convention center. So you don't necessarily have to stay at the Galt House. There are a lot of hotels in that downtown area within walking distance, a ton. I'm looking at Moxie next year because Zombie Taco is in the basement and it's yummy.
Yeah. There are a ton of hotels surrounding that convention center. It's honestly ridiculous how many. And they're all walking distance. And for us, walking from the Hampton to the con was fine. Walking from the con to the second venue, or sorry, the convention center to the Galt House was fine. The difficult one, or somewhat difficult one, is from the hotel to the Galt House. That was the one where it was worth it for us to take an Uber. And I will say Uber prices vary ridiculously in Louisville by the minute, which was kind of shocking. So if you open up your app and it says $25, just wait 5 minutes and check again. It'll probably be $8. We did learn that. Yeah.
And I didn't really want to walk back to our hotel room, the 20-minute walk downtown when it was midnight. But that's just me. Yep. And so if you have mobility issues, your opinions are going to vary on what close is, but there is definitely a ton of hotels encircling the area.
And also parking was surprisingly prevalent at somewhat reasonable prices, I will say. I don't want to go into too many details, but the Everyday Board Games crew got a hotel, or sorry, a bed and breakfast, or Airbnb, whatever you call them nowadays, offsite and parked at a parking garage across from the hotel for like $8 US a day. And it was literally, not the hotel, sorry, across from the convention center. And like when they were given, here, you check out this awesome stuff, take it with you, they just ran across the street and put it in their trunk. To the fact that even though we had already paid for hotel parking, I was tempted to also park there just to have a trunk nearby. As for pricing, I don't know. The con rate was very reasonable. I think Deanna would agree.
It was. I no longer remember what it was, and I canceled the reservation. Sorry, I can't tell you.
But you do want to try to get in with the block. They did try to make sure there were enough rooms for Gamma members to stay on site. Well, again, on site was at not on site. It was weird, right? So you went to the convention center at 8 in the morning, but at 6:30, the convention center's done. There's nothing happening there. Everything moved to the Galt House. Meanwhile, though, there was stuff happening at the Galt House all day. So that became a problem for us because we didn't realize that, like, oh, I'm going to be in this meeting. Or not meeting, but I'm going to be in this presentation until 1 o'clock, or sorry, whatever, 12:50. And my next one's at 1 o'clock. And then realizing, oh, that one's at the Galt House. Crap, that's not going to happen.
I had meetings scheduled that I didn't realize we're all in the same building. And I was like, oh, this gets fun.
All right. We have anything else?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this one you may not be able to answer. Eggman Jr. is asking, are publishers going direct to Canadian stores, or is Canada still mostly distributors?
I totally depended on the publisher. Many publishers now have Canadian distribution networks, ways to get you the games. Some of that is through game stores. Some of that is through Amazon.ca. And it widely varies. Like, and it'd be weird because we're starting to feel, yay, everyone can ship to Canada now. And then we get to that one publisher and like, oh, you're in Canada. So it varied. That's probably the best I can say. I don't know.
Other people, and this is from a media point of view and from the fact that we review games, we'd say, well, we're in Canada. I know people don't like to ship to Canada. They're like, oh, no, we just ship from our warehouse in Canada.
Yeah,
we're getting that a lot more as media. So, and I know we ran into retailers that were Canadian that were there. One of the people that we sat with at lunch was a woman from out in BC. So I have to assume that there was some value for Canadian retailers to be there at the event.
One thing I saw coming up in the chat was, were fulfillment companies there? GameFound, Backer, anyone like that at the show?
I don't remember seeing them. I think they'd fall under the warehousing and distribution arm of Gamma.
I would expect so. All right. And this is a Roger question. Is there some type of print on demand or pre-order system with some publishers? Like was print on demand or at all a thing that you saw on the show floor? Was there any publishers talking about, low run counts or print on demand type stuff?
I mean, there was definitely pre-orders, but print on demand, I didn't see any. But again, it's not something I was looking for. Maybe
so I can Mo talk to that can say
that he did see some of them.
Yeah, I can talk a bit about that. I am searching GameFound under exhibitors, and I'm not getting anything. Mm-hmm. I'm not seeing Kickstarter, which is kind of surprising. Kickstarter wasn't there.
Kickstarter came up as a topic in several
seminars. Oh, yeah, there were presentations, but I'm seeing Kickstarter as a company.
But Kickstarter, yeah. Kickstarter doesn't really fall underneath any of the arms of Gamma. As they're an interesting one, whereas BackerKit, GameFound, the fulfillment companies do fall clearly underneath one of those formats. Whereas Kickstarter is just kind of a place. It's not a retailer. Weird. It's not a fulfillment. It's not distribution. It's not warehousing. What is Kickstarter? Yeah.
It's like eBay. It'd be weird if eBay was there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there are a number of publishers out there that have their own pre-order system that works like a crowdfunding system. The most famous one is GMT Games. They have something called the P500, which is the pre-order 500 system, where if they get at least 500 orders of a game, they do a print run of it. And then when that sells out, they do another P500 run, and if it gets 500 orders, they print it. I saw three different publishers with versions of that. There was a P300 I saw, and a P1000. I don't know if I'm allowed to share who had them, but I saw three different publishers at the event that had that as a system. And I think that's as close that any publisher that's not a completely indie publisher is going to get to doing print on demand. Basically, they're doing print on demand as long as we get 500 orders.
Yeah, which makes sense because, again, components, you're not talking about RPGs where you're just dropping out a book, which is, right. anyone can print a book right now. I can print one if I really need to right here. Whereas when you get into components, boxes, et cetera, it gets a little trickier for the on-demand type stuff.
Oh, and that's something else we should strongly call out that we didn't really talk about. We mentioned a bit we're talking with the games. This was also very much a TTRPG con. Like, this was not just board games. It is game manufacturers, not board game manufacturers association. That's there were a lot of RPGs there and RPG companies. Artel Saurian was there. Free League was there. Modiphius was there. The notable absence would be Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast. Darrington Press, Green Ronin. They were there too. We just are not focusing on RPGs, and we met with a lot of these people and had to go, sorry, we are not doing RPG content right now. Sorry, our listeners who love us when we talk about RPGs. But again, trying to focus down on what we're good at and what we can get played, we're focusing on board games. So I don't want people to think that this is a board game only. There were also puzzles. There were also like jigsaw puzzles. There was a wooden puzzle publisher, not Escape Vault, someone else. It was all forms of tabletop. What I don't remember seeing was any LARP groups, but I wouldn't have been surprised if someone was there.
I wish we could have gone to Green Ronin and said, hey, can you give us all the M&M content I can put up behind me and never talk about?
You just want to antagonize everyone.
We need to review Sentinels of Earth Prime.
Yes.
And then we can talk to Green Ronin again. Unfortunately, it's one of the games that was buried when the basement flooded. So I actually found it the other day. It is now accessible. So we need to sit down and play that. And then I'll talk to Green Ronin.
And I know for the game nights that they had a dedicated RPG room. We just didn't go in it. I saw it on the map. So yeah, we're doing a disservice if we're not mentioning to you that Gamma Expo is also RPGs.
Yes, very much so. I don't know about more RPGs than board games, but like the WizKids booth was one of the most impressive we went to. And 90% of their content was RPG focused.
All right. Well, I think that just about covers everything from the chat room. Thank you, lobbyists, for being an integral part of our show. And now a word from our sponsor, Grand Gamers Guild.
Granny Hortensia, owner of the lands of an eccentric farmer's family, dies one day. She didn't leave a will. One night, the moon turns red and the grandmother reappears as a ghost to put her four grandchildren to a test. She will visit them three times, always coinciding with the red moon. After her three appearances, whoever has become the most experienced farmer will inherit all of her lands.
La Familia Hort is a somewhat twisted farming game for 2 to 4 players that features some awesomely creepy Edward Gorey-style artwork. Money, water, and fertilizer management are key to pleasing Granny with the best garden.
Now, we got to try this farming game at Gamma Expo and were impressed by its asymmetric player powers, quick gameplay, and of course, that very cool artwork.
Yeah, the gameplay was solid. I'm looking forward to trying it again. I showed it to the kids, and of course, Gwen just went crazy over that creepy, cute, like Edward Gorey style art.
Well, pick up a copy of La Familia Hort direct from Grand Gamers Guild or through your FLGS when the game hits retail later this year.
Now, if you do choose to pick it up direct from Mark, be sure to use our code BELLHOP, BELLHOP, to save 10%.
And with that, we wrap up our Gamma Expo 2024 coverage. Thank you for joining us for this two-part series. Next week, we go back to our regular format of answering your questions.
Because we are the Dear Abby for Gamers. Send your questions to questions@tabletopbellhop.com or head over to our website and click on Ask the Bellhop.
One last reminder for the Windsor Essex locals.
This episode drops on March 26th, and I just want to remind people that we've got two local gaming events happening this week.
The first is the first ever Brews and Board Games event at the Walkerville Brewery on Thursday, March 28th, running from 5 till 9 p.m.
And next up is our March Barbershop Bar Open Board Game Night, which is happening Saturday the 30th from 6 until 10 p.m.
These are both free to attend, and you can bring your own games or play some of ours. Food and drink will be available, and we encourage you to support the venue as a way to say thanks for giving us a space to gather and play, and to encourage them to have us back next month. And now in the Bellhop's Tabletop, we look back at the games we played since the last episode.
Yeah, which isn't a lot. We did get a few games in. It's stuff we actually brought back from Gamma or heard about at Gamma Expo. The first one, Sean actually got to see us playing this one, is I introduced the kids to Sushi Boat. From Japanime Games, we got to do a demo game at the expo. This is our first time playing our physical copy. Actually, I unpacked it and opened it up at the coffee shop we were at. This is a sushi, all-you-can-eat sushi restaurant board game where you have the actual track of plates of sushi going around on a wooden board shaped like a boat. Thus, the theme of the sushi boat. Each turn, it's worker placement. You're going to decide where you're going to sit. You are then going to take one action, which could be to collect a yen, to order a side dish, or to tip any server, a staff member, who is at your spot. When you tip them, they each have a different special ability. After you've done that action, you are then going to collect your sushi plate, which you stack on your mat, your tatami mat, in front of you. The sushi comes in 7 different varieties, if I remember correctly. And there are 4 different colors of plates plus a wild card plate. You are trying to do set collection, trying to eat as much different sushi as you want. And you're also getting bonuses for eating plates of the same color. And then there's end game scoring for doing various types of set collection. Great looking game. Fantastic component quality. Catches people's attention. Owner of the place we're at was very interested in what we were doing. Quick playing game. Pretty simple. But surprisingly cutthroat? I don't know if that's the word. Hard? More difficult than you would expect.
Tight. It's tight. Because we didn't realize it the first time we played it because it was a demo and we thought it was shortened and that's why it felt so tight. But when you realize that your goals for the end game scoring are things like have 5 of these cards in front of you. Well, you have to have the money to buy those cards and you have to use your action to buy them. So you have to use so many actions to get money and you have to use so many actions to buy cards. You better be focusing on that every single turn to be able to get those 5 cards to get your bonus points for that menu. If you are tipping the servers to get out of their actions, you're not getting that. And if you're not tipping the servers to get other actions, then you're not getting more than, say, 7 in your stack, maybe 6, because it only goes for that many rounds, at least at we were playing 4. Yeah, yes. At 4 players. And that might be variable. I don't think you take out any cards with less players. I don't know. But it was tight. It was just surprisingly tight.
Yeah, and one of the, like, some of the end goals were to collect 4 blue plates and 4 green plates. We only actually got 8 plates total. So if you took 1 plate of the wrong color, you couldn't get your goal. Now, again, we've only played this once and a demo. So 1.5 times. Maybe we missed something. Maybe, like, I'm wondering if we're playing extreme. Because, wow, is that cutthroat? Wow, is it hard? Like, if you are going to go for your menu, your special menu, you better be laser focused on that menu. And at this point, I just can't decide if that's a feature or a flaw in the game, because I kind of want it to be lighter, more loosey-goosey, let's eat a bunch of sushi.
It feels and looks like a light family weight game, but that point system there for the menu cards makes it really tight.
Roger in the chat's asking, how much strategy is there moving the sushi? So there is quite a bit. So what happens is you're going to flip over a card at the start of the round, and you're going to add sushi to the growing track. Well, not growing, but the track. And you're either going to add enough to just fill the track, or you're going to add enough that at least one goes in the trash at the end. And getting the right colored sushi to a spot you can land is a big part of the game. Now, we talked about the side dishes. The side dishes are all special cards that go into your hand that you can play to do something special. And in our last game, I used two different cards to be able to move it so I could get exactly what I needed. Without realizing that the fact I took one wild card plate ended up ruining my strategy anyway. So it's a big part of it, but it's not like the key. To me, it kind of reminds me of the Q in Starship Captains. Like, it's part of the game. You have to be aware of it, and you are going to manipulate that to get what you want. But it wasn't like the main thing, and it's all that mattered. There was no like planning three turns ahead for that sushi, you know, will get pushed two times.
One of the big keys, of course, is the memory aspect. There are those two hidden locations under the end of the boat. And when you are, at certain points in the game, that becomes a guessing game, essentially, a memory game to gain an advantage. It was interesting watching this game. And the first thing I saw as I walked up, the family had already been playing it, and I grabbed a coffee and sat down. And the first thing I noticed was the board was way bigger than I expected. This is not a tiny little board. This is a big hunk of wood. And it was really, the size, allowed the sushi plates to be more tactile than I expected at the same point. These aren't quarter size. These are bigger than a toonie. They're big size, big chunky pieces with a big wooden game board. So I don't think it takes up too much space. It definitely took up more space than I expected. So, but it's not a table hog, but it's definitely something that has that table presence that's like, oh wow, look at that. You've got this, you know, very nice piece of wood with all these colored pieces sliding around on it. It grabs the attention.
The only problem with this game is it makes me want to go buy sushi.
Yeah, I do. The big thing that's going to depend if people will like this or not, the tightness that we need to confirm if it's always there at all the player accounts, but also the memory aspect. So not only is there what's called the Wasabi Challenge, now and then a card will flip up and you then kind of bet on what the two colored plates are that are hidden. And Wasabi is worth 1 point each. So that can be a big thing. And actually, swung the last game, actually. Like, Gwen would have won had she gotten one more Wasabi Challenge correct, instead of Deanna winning the game. But there's also, you have to remember what sushi you've eaten. And that's supposed to be thematic. Like, you never remember what your first plate you grabbed was when you're actually at the all-you-can-eat restaurant. You just have the stack of plates. And while the other thing with only collecting 8 pieces of sushi, well, the full set is 7. So again, you have room for one mistake, one duplication. Where I thought the game was going to be, I was going to make multiple sets. I was going to have a set of 3 different ones, a set of 4 different ones. And if I'm really good, a set of 7 and I'd have all of those. No, it's like I have a set of 7 and one leftover, which again is the memory aspect. You have to remember which of the 7 types of sushi you've already eaten. All right. Next up was an online play. We don't talk about BGA plays a lot on here, but because I don't know how many people paid attention last week, but one of the games Deanna and I called out as really catching our eye was a game called Thrive. And I stink for not getting the publisher's name right here. We met with the designer of Thrive, and we were talking about how much we are enjoying, I'm drawing a blank on the name of the game. It's not Shogun.
Zensu.
Thank you. We were talking about how much we enjoy Zensu with this publisher. And then this designer kind of said, have you ever heard of Thrive? And we're like, no, what's Thrive? And he described this game and he's like, it's my game. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. So what Thrive is, well, Sean, do you remember the size of the grid, 5x5?
I want to say yes. It's Adams Apple Games is the publisher.
So 5x5 or 6x6, it doesn't really matter for the important part here. And on the board, you start with whatever the number, 5 or 6 pieces that are these like squares, rounded squares, with a pegboard on them. Like, think a cribbage board.
Fixed.
With one peg set there automatically in the middle. And one just in front of that. And what the board, the pieces represent is the game board. And what the pegs represent is where your pieces can move. So in this game, your goal is to eliminate all but one of the opponent's pieces. And you do that by moving a piece based on what pegs are on it, how it shows. So at the start of the game, all you can do is move one of your pieces forward one. But then after that, you get 2 pegs to add to any piece. And on these things is the grid on them would be 5x5.
Yeah, so it's a six by six board with a 5x5 grid on your piece of pegs you can put in.
So that's the whole game. Like, you move forward one, now add 2 pegs. Well, now your pieces can move different ways. So you are literally like designing your own chess pieces as you play. It reminded me a bit of the Duke that way. But again, you can totally adapt where you're moving and everything. And it is on Board Game Arena, and I strongly recommend people check this out.
Yeah, I think graphically in Board Game Arena, it could be a little better. I think the pegs didn't stand out as much as I would have liked them to. I also didn't read the rules, so I didn't realize that it was only until one piece. I thought you had to kill all of my pieces. So I did a sacrifice at the end and lost because that was the end game. I sacrificed, not the piece before the end game.
Oh, see, so, I thought you were just like not having fun and through the game.
No, no, I thought I was going to make a big move with my last piece, except that was the end of the game. That's what I get for not reading the instructions on any Board Game Arena game I play the first time. But aside from a minor graphical complaint and me not understanding the game, it was definitely a fun, challenging game right up there with the Duke or the Viking version of the Duke, which I can never remember the name of.
Jarl.
And games like that, where you've got that flexibility in player or piece movement, but unlike the other ones, this is all up to you. It's not what you pull from a bag or what you decide from your options in front of you. You are each turn crafting the movement capabilities of your army or lotus blossoms on a pond, which is, I think, the actual
theme. I will call out the theme. Supposedly what you're moving are seed pods, and those are where the seeds are sprouting. I honestly think the game would have been better if it was more abstract. I found the artwork distracting. I think just a very plain grid, more like Zensu, right? With very clear pieces, would have benefited that particular game.
Yeah, I don't need to be a lotus flower. I just want to enjoy the game.
And do you had something indirect you wanted to talk about?
Aside from Sushi Boat, we didn't play any other games since our last episode, but I got to talk about games a lot with my daughter because the one that's in 11th grade, our eldest kid, is now running the board game club that she has started back up again this semester at her high school. So we talked a lot about what games to bring and what people will play, and what she's running into is that they tend to only want to play party games. And there's one friend that she has in particular that has stated, I only want to play party games. So we had an interesting talk about how to introduce like different styles of games and what might go over. And now she's got a plan for next week. And I'm super curious to see how this turns out, because the teacher that is allowing them to have this club has also offered to stay later. So that's super cool too, so that they can be there for longer. So now her plan is to like start off her one friend who only wants to play party games and also has to leave early and set them up to play a party game with one or two other people, and then go over here and set up a slightly longer, something more elaborate. And she's like, but I don't want to go too elaborate because I don't know what people are willing to play. So she was thinking Photographer Heroes or Thrones of Valyria. That was what she came up with. So, but yeah, it's been super fun talking with her about games. We were sitting there looking, she had a massive list that she had narrowed it down to, and we were looking each one up on Board Game Arena and checking the recommended player numbers. And yeah. The other thing, every time I'm talking with her about this with her, is just it strikes me as interesting that there's actually more girls than there are guys in the club. And, it just makes me gleeful that, my kids inherently think that board gaming is just a welcoming space. She doesn't think that's weird at all, that there's more girls than guys. And she would never think, oh, girls aren't supposed to play games. And I'm like, as someone who has been in the hobby for 40 some years and is female, that has not always been true. And it is awesome to see that it is true for my kids. Mm-hmm. So that's it.
Absolutely. That's fantastic to know that the up and coming hobbyists of our in this space are starting off from a better place than we had the opportunity to, or that we generated within our own groupings.
Yeah, it's a diverse space as well, from what I understand.
Yeah, it's been fascinating. The big thing, and we've mentioned this before, is that as hobby gamers, we tend to think in terms of hobby games.
And when you launch a public club or a public event, the expectation is very different, right? Like what we think of as light and what we think of as heavy really changes based on someone who does not have the experience we have. And the big thing to remember, and I keep trying to point this out to Gwen, is there's nothing wrong with party games. There's nothing wrong with liking those lighter games. That's not a problem. You're not better for liking heavy games. And we've talked about this many times in the podcast. The games you play don't make you a better or worse person. It's just about having fun with other people. But our daughters having grown up in our house where we talk and have hobby games all over the place, it's hard to keep them not elitist, right? Like don't think that you're better. There's nothing wrong with running a board game club where all you do is play the chameleon and whatever every night.
Well, I think she's having a really good time playing party games, and they've only met, like, this will be the third time, I think.
Right.
But she just wants to broaden their horizons, but for everyone's sake. Like, she's like, I'm pretty sure this person said that their favorite game is Carcassonne, and this person said that they like to play card games. And she's like, I want to make sure I'm not just playing party games because my one friend has said they will only play party
games. Yes.
No, that's so true. And like I pointed out to her, somebody might be showing up and going, okay, well, I'm not going to say anything, but all they're playing is party games every week. Maybe this isn't the right place for me. I'll stop coming. You know? So I said, you know, trying to cater to all the various people that are there. And acting as a host, which you and I have been doing for years, but she's just learning, right? So
yeah, one of the great tools you can do to try and help head off that you know, the person coming in saying, "Oh, this is only party games," is even if you know you're not gonna play something more advanced, having it there, having it visible, so that someone walks in and goes, "Oh, what's that? I'm interested in that." I'm like, "Oh, well, we can't play that this week because we're doing this, but." Next week, let's look at Starship Captains or, you know, something. Yeah.
So she's been providing lists of games online, too, to pique people's interest and stuff, because they have a little online component to this. So, yeah, like I said, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But she literally had someone show up and say, the only thing I like to play is Monopoly Cats.
And that's where you pull a boop and say, all right, cats it is then. Well, that was the double bell.
That means our shift is coming to an end and we're going to have to lock the lobby doors.
Before we start locking things down, let's take a moment to thank a selection of our Tabletop Bellhop Patreon patrons.
Brian Sheehan. Thank you, Brian.
Dukas. Thank you.
Ron F. Thank you, Ron.
Roger Malosh. In the chat to hear your name called out. Always awesome.
David Miller Jr. Thank you.
Brian Kurtz. Thank you, Brian.
Well, even when we're not here live, you can always find us at tabletopbellhop.com, all over the web as Tabletop Bellhop, one word, and on your podcatcher of choice as the Tabletop Bellhop Gaming Podcast.
If you dig what we've been doing, help keep us going by becoming a Tabletop Bellhop Patreon patron. To get you access to First Thoughts reviews, our pre-production show notes, bonus audio, and more.
That's all for tonight. You can also support us by giving us a thumbs up, a like, leave a comment, or better yet, tell your friends and fellow gamers about our show.
For the Tabletop Bellhop Gaming Podcast, I'm Sean.
I'm Deanna.
And I'm Mo.
Thank you.
And
game on.
Find full reviews, show notes, and more at tabletopbellhop.com. Graphic design by Brian Weiss at RPG & Co. Music is Nimbus by Eveningland. The podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution License.